Welcome to today's episode of Positively Geared. I'm joined here in the studio with Lloyd Edge. Welcome, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. How are you going?
Really well. Lloyd, we've got another exciting guest in the studio with us today. In fact, one of your own, Michael Cohen, senior buyer's agent at Oz Property Professionals, is joining us and with us right now. Michael, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Alex, and welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Michael, this is your first podcast, I think you mentioned before we jumped in.
It is indeed.
So how are you feeling?
Oh, look, a little bit nervous, obviously, strange environment, but roaring to get going.
So, Michael, I guess for our listeners today who are graced with your appearance on this podcast, tell us a bit about your story. Obviously, you are a part of Lloyd's team now as a senior buyer's agent, but what was the, I guess, the story before that?
Okay, I was a buyer's agent down in Double Bay, dealing with both investment, but more predominantly primary residence, and an opportunity came up with Lloyd to help in the business and particularly with the primary residence side of the business. So we joined forces, so to speak, and that brings me here today.
Excellent. And Lloyd, obviously having someone with Michael's extensive experience is a real benefit to your team also.
Yes, absolutely, Alex. Michael's had years of experience in real estate and as a buyer's agent. The primary residence market, that's basically where people are buying and occupied properties. So he's got a lot of experience dealing with people who are looking for their own homes. He adds a lot of value to our business in that respect. He also works with some of our investor clients and helps them with their strategies and their respective purchases. But it's great having him on board, and it's great having him as part of the team.
So guys, I'm really excited for this episode today. We're going to take a real deep dive into the property market. We're also going to revisit a lot of the things, Lloyd, that we've previously covered off on in various episodes of the Positively Geared podcast. But we're well and truly into the first quarter of 2021 now. Michael, I know that you're predominantly doing you're helping a lot of owner occupiers find their hopefully forever homes, or at least the stepping stone property. We're also seeing a lot of buyer demand, which far exceeds supply in many markets in Sydney and other areas of the country. How are you finding it out there?
Look, that's a very good question, Alex. What I'm seeing is a shortage of stock, plenty of buyers in the market, and there's good market sentiment from that side of it. And what that tells me is a couple of things. Firstly is the buyers out there believe that there is buoyancy in the market will go up. But again, it's that stock issue. So I think there is a little bit of artificial pricing in there, but I don't think when more stock comes on the market that that's going to flatten at all. What I think will also happen with the sellers is as they start to see the borders opening up again, fully confidence with the buyers, they will start to come onto the market. I think we're in for a very good year.
And Michael, obviously, and Lloyd, feel welcome to build on this. I know you do a lot of work with investors, helping investors build their portfolio. One of the big reasons you wrote the book Positively Geared to help, so many more people get access to that information and your skill set. But Michael, talking strictly about owner-occupier purchases versus an investment purchase, how do you find the two different, and what should people expect when they do look to engage a buyer's agent?
Well, firstly, there are some similarities. And the first is that they are engaging a buyer's agent to do the heavy lifting and also to provide their expertise in areas that they're not familiar with. Where it starts to draw apart is in timeframes and in the actual strategy. For example, we start with all our prospective buyers with a wish list. Now, this comes down into three areas: general information, investor information, and home buyer information. From there, what we will do if it is, a primary residence or a homeowner is we will have a discussion around the wish list. Now, Alex, for example, if, husband and wife are looking to buy their forever home, we get them to fill the wish list out individually. And the reason we do that is it doesn't matter how well you think you know your partner. When it comes to buying a property, there will be differences in, what you are looking for, what your prerequisites are. So we sit them down and we go through that. We like to sit them down over, a wine or a beer where possible to be in a relaxed environment. Once we get consensus on what should be done, we finalise the brief. From our perspective, what we then do is that we go away and we research both the primary search area and the secondary search area. What I like to do is to keep to three key suburbs maximum in the primary search and three in the secondary search area. Now, that doesn't always happen, but that's what we like to do. We then go and prepare what we call the getting started session. And what that is really price research in those key areas. We will go back between 3 and 12 months looking at the pricing within those areas, matching 100% on that search criteria or that buyer brief. We then also do compromises. So we compromise price, property, and position. Not a lot of the other buyer's agents out there do that in their starter sessions. And the reason we do that is to look and say, well, this is what your dream house is. As we can see, there hasn't really been a lot in your area, in your price range. If you had an unlimited budget, this is what you could get. So that's the price. We then compromise on the actual property. So instead of four bedrooms, you're really in a three-bedroom area. Instead of three bathrooms, you're in a two-bathroom area. And finally, on position. So then what we do is we look for the next ring of suburbs outside the primary and the secondary search area to make sure, you know, that the other opportunities aren't missed. And what that does is it really, really drills down and gives social proof into what that search area is going to be. After the starter session, what we will do is we will adjust where needed into that buyer brief, and then we actually move forward with identifying and shortlisting properties.
Great stuff there, Michael. Now, I wanted to add to that with, I guess, the difference with investment properties is that it's much less emotional, as we've discussed before. So we'll still start with the wish list, but the wish list is really all about what your goals are. So your financial goals, perhaps your lifestyle goals, whether you want to have a certain amount of passive income, yeah, to live off in the future, semi-retirement, putting your kids through schools, buying a boat, whatever it is you want to do. And then when we set the strategy on what type of property will work for you, then there's no emotion involved. So it's really about what's going to achieve that. Are you going to buy in an area for high growth, an area that's got good rental yields, going to get good cash flow, you're going to create equity? And that opens up the scope. So obviously looking at the budget parameters first, but then rather than, for example, buying around Double Bay because that's where you want to live, you can actually then pick the best investment spot for good returns that meet your strategy. And that can be, you know, any city around the country, essentially.
As we all know, you know, a lot of people over the break take time and obviously want to make decisions for the new year, and whether that's upsizing, downsizing, buying that second or first investment property. It's typically within the first quarter that we start to see a lot of that movement. Lloyd, it's interesting. I've always found over the holiday period, which we're sort of well and truly out of in many respects now, but a lot of people will possibly, particularly while the international borders are closed, they'll go on a holiday somewhere they haven't been before and they think, oh, wow, that's a great place to buy for an investment. But Lloyd, you know, we've spoken about this so many times in the past. It's not necessarily where you've just had a good holiday or where a friend's friend at a barbecue said, oh, that, you know, we've bought up there and this is the next place to invest. It's really important to align yourself with a buyer's agent or someone who's got experience in that space like yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So it really is important to hire someone who can offer, you know, the expertise in areas that you can't, and also, you know, to be searching and buying in areas that, you know, you don't actually live, because, you know, a buyer's agent will actually go and, you know, search the properties, inspect the properties, shortlist the properties, and there's nothing like being on the ground. So, you know, once we shortlist the properties and we start inspecting them, then going and checking them out and making sure that the street appeal is good. You know, you don't want to be buying on a noisy road. Sometimes you might check Google Maps and it appears to be okay, but then you find out that it's actually not that great a location. Or you turn up and you find that next door to the property that you're looking at buying, someone's growing a drug lab or something like that. So there's all these things that you really need to do by being able to check out the property. And having a buyer's agent do that for you can save a lot of, you know, time, money and legwork, because, you know, we kind of do that kind of stuff all of the time. But what I've also noticed, particularly over the holiday break and during the pandemic, is, you know, people are more open now to investing in some of these regional areas than they used to be, because there's a lot of hype around, you know, sort of people moving out of Sydney and moving to these areas for lifestyle. There's growth in these areas now, but because people have been to these areas for holidays, they actually think, oh, that's not such a bad area after all. I might think about just investing here and maybe I can, you know, move here later. It could be my holiday house. So people are much more open to that. And, you know, we came back at the start of this year to a lot of new inquiries from people who are really open to that kind of stuff as well. So it's been really interesting.
If we can talk for a moment, and Michael and Lloyd, I'd love to get you both to shed your light and perspective on this. Obviously, both doing a lot of similar work, but also focusing on two different key buyer types. You know, in my experience in the markets I've worked over the past few years, let's say since the peak of the last property cycle, I've observed that stock has virtually been down year on year up until I think last year, which was actually higher than the previous years, albeit by the smallest of margins. We continue to operate in a very low supply in relative terms to demand. How do you guys approach that, and what's some advice that you can give for people listening today that might be a bit deluded to the market and are still in the market struggling to find their next home?
Short answer, get a buyer's agent.
Long answer?
Long answer is it's like anything, Alex. When you're looking, for example, to go and buy your dream car, you can go to many, many different dealerships. You can search the carsguide.com and you might not find it. But there are people out there called car brokers who you can engage, and they will actually go and do the heavy lifting and speak to dealers about, you know, if we put it in real estate terms, off-market opportunities. And it's very similar when you're looking to buy a property, whether it be for an investment or, you know, for your family home, is that a lot of those opportunities aren't being marketed. And what I'm seeing out there at the moment is a lot of vendors are looking to test the market, but they don't want to have their properties listed or marketed. They want to test them through the database of the agents, through their relationships with buyers' agents to see sort of, you know, if they can, you know, get the right price that they want. It's like anything. I mean, you've got to engage a professional if you want to get the best result.
Absolutely. Lloyd?
Well, I've actually used a car broker in the past, so I've been through that experience. But yeah, just to add to what Michael's saying, one thing that our real estate agents really like doing with, you know, using buyer's agents is that they know that buyer's agents have qualified clients. So, you know, we don't go shopping for property for a client unless they've got their finance approval in place. Real estate agents know that. And that's why we're always sort of the first point of call when they've got a property that they're, you know, it's either pre-market or off-market, and they're trying to get through to us.
Lloyd, we discussed particularly early into the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of commentary around where the market was going to go. You know, there was a lot of talk around, you know, big market correction or crash. That clearly hasn't happened now for the benefit of hindsight, although I don't think we needed hindsight to form that opinion. Particularly, you know, Lloyd, you had some pretty well thought and logical predictions on the market. Now that we're sort of here, you know, is there anything you'd like to talk about in respect to, you know, what people were facing at that time?
Yeah, well, I was quite outspoken about the fact that I basically said there was not going to be a property crash. And you know, so many people, you know, came out and, you know, the banks were talking about it and the economists were talking about it. I just couldn't see it happening. I mean, above all else, you know, the government really is not going to allow a housing crash in the country. And they are really doing whatever they can to, you know, to prop things up there. But, you know, couple that with, you know, really low interest rates, and I believe that's probably going to be the case for about the next 3 years. We're not going to see much movement up, if anything, in interest rates. And then, you know, there's a lot of talk around, you know, JobKeeper and all the other government benefits as just temporarily, you know, keeping the housing market up. And then people saying it's going to crash in September, and then it was going to, you know, crash in 2021 and so on. However, I think people are now seeing that the market is actually very resilient. And at the end of the day, if you're buying well-located property where people actually want to live, then there's always going to be, you know, a market for that with, you know, with good pricing. And the key thing also is that there's been a few changes which have actually helped, and as I alluded to earlier, with people sort of moving out of city areas and buying in the country. I was actually predicting that back in the middle of 2020, and there's now, you know, there's documentation to actually show that. There's data from the September quarter saying that there's actually been people moving out to these country areas. It's pushing the prices up. People are now looking for larger homes, maybe with a home office. They realize they can work from home. So even in the future, you know, businesses will probably start to have more people come back to the office, but it probably won't be quite the same as it was and everything.
You know, it's really funny, guys. When it comes down to the core, we're all human beings, and we're, as much as we think we're rational and logical, we're very much emotional creatures, even when we don't realize it. And I guess that's a segue into, you know, a lot of sentiment I've been seeing, particularly right at the initial start of the quarter, is that there's so many buyers out there at the moment that have that fear of missing out again, or fear of, you know, the market going up another 5-10%, and they're going to be priced out of it or really stretched as to their maximum budget. You know, it's always incredible how quickly sentiment can change overnight, and it's really night and day compared to, you know, where it was only 6 or 8 months ago, Lloyd.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. And, you know, you look back to where things were 8 months ago. You know, people were so scared, not wanting to do anything and stuff like that. But people who did buy then have actually done really well and made some good money. You know, now people have got FOMO thinking, I must get in now, I'm going to miss out. But the prices are going to really start skyrocketing this year. I mean, if people don't get in and start buying stuff now, they literally are going to miss out on some good opportunities. And, you know, we could always say that. But the fact is, I think that the price are really going to, you know, improve more this year, where, you know, if people had bought when the prices were down or when they thought the prices were going to go down, then yeah, that's actually the best time to do it. But that's when people sort of ran scared and didn't do anything. But, you know, people are sort of like sheep. They follow everyone else and everyone was scared. So most people didn't do anything. And now everyone's wanting to jump on and there's FOMO, not much stock levels and prices are increasing as a result. There's all this demand there from people who are thinking, oh, I must get in and buy property now.
What I think's really great for people listening to take away is that you can almost guarantee that this same 12-month period, and I'm talking not necessarily about what the market's done, but more observing how people react to the market and the decisions that people make, you know, as investors, and you can sort of probably quickly find parallels between the good investors that obviously didn't get too deterred by the market versus the people that sat on the fence. And I think, you know, we've seen throughout history, particularly in the Australian property market, that these scenarios always invariably occur just in different ways. Sorry, Lloyd, go on.
I wrote in my book, Positively Geared, about 2018, there was an article or a story on 60 Minutes called Bricks and Slaughter. And it talked about a 40% crash in the market that was going to occur. And I basically said at the time, I wrote blogs and I said, this is not going to happen. And these are the reasons why. And of course, that never happened. And now here we are in 2020 and then 2021, the same predictions, and they haven't happened. So people have got really short memories because people love a media headline or they just love to hear some bad news from an economist or a banker somewhere rather than actually sort of thinking that, oh, maybe that's not going to happen. Maybe I should, you know, listen to myself rather than listen to everything else that's out there.
Michael, I'm keen to, you know, get you to shed some light on your perspective on what you've seen the market do over the past 12 months and, you know, where you might see it headed over the next 12 months.
Like Lloyd, I didn't buy into the, you know, the doom and gloom Commonwealth Bank 30%, you know, falls in market. I think if you look at nationally over the last 12 months, there was very, very little overall fall within markets. I think Melbourne was down under 1% or something, you know, after lockdowns, things like that. I think we're in for a strong market. And coming back to what Lloyd was saying earlier, the banks aren't going to let the market fall over. They are not going to, you know, have a drive on repossessions or things like that. And so the government and the banks will work very, very hard to keep the property market buoyant. They need to because it really is the backbone of the economy at the moment. If you start having homeowners out on the street, everything else falls in a domino type effect. Coming back to the FOMO point as well, and again, this is the difference between trying to be an investor on your own, whether it be in the property market, share market or whatever. The good investors seek professional advice. Those that try and do it on their own inevitably make mistakes, and chasing markets is a mistake. When we're talking about numbers in an investment and we have certain areas that, you know, meet that criteria, if the market starts to move against you, you simply just change to another environment. And that's the information that the average investor out there, the mum and dad that's trying to do it themselves, don't have access to. They don't have the research tools. They don't have the professional capabilities or the time to do it. And that's, you know, where buyer's agents really, really do come into the fore on the investment side.
Michael, particularly just on your comment about, you know, equipping mum and dad investors with the tools they need or the knowledge they need to make better decisions, how do you deal with initial pushback? Do you know, do you find sometimes clients they're unsure about that suggestion, or they might think, oh, Michael, but you know, how's that going to work? We want to live here. Or is that a common conversation in the owner-occupier space versus an investment purchase, which is a bit more, these are the numbers, it works or it doesn't?
Let me address the investment first, because what it really comes down to is if someone has purchased property before, if someone has gone through that roller coaster, whether it be primary residence or investment, they're less likely to push back when they see the numbers. When, particularly if it's a rentvestor and they haven't purchased before and you're making suggestions, they do tend to be more emotional and can push back a little bit because they're still viewing this as a property that they want to live in, even though that they never will. So then comes down to the education of the difference between what they should be looking at in relation to numbers, as opposed to, you know, curtains, carpets and front yards that a lot of them tend to do. Once you have that conversation with them and they start to understand it, very easy to work with. With the primary residence side of it, again, people have their preferred suburbs, and having those difficult and hard conversations in relation to you can't really afford the home you want, the suburb that you want, needs to be done delicately, but it needs to be done firmly. Otherwise, they're going to be living under the delusion that they will eventually be able to find what we call the unicorn, just don't exist.
And I think particularly too, Michael, you know, having that conversation earlier into the piece, as you mentioned, is it's more advantageous to them more than anyone, because obviously you work on the outcome of performing and sourcing a property for them. But I think there's nothing worse than, you know, a homeowner or prospective homeowner, you know, going through months and months of delusion just to then have that hard conversation with.
Oh, 100%, Alex. And, you know, as an organization, we believe that you've got to have that upfront and set the parameters. You know, the wish list is called the wish list for a reason. That's your wishes. That's what you want. The getting started session is really about the social proof and reality of where the market is and adjusting. Now, we might adjust a search criteria two or three times along the way, but if you can educate the buyers right at the start, then that process, when you do have to make adjustments in search criteria because of market conditions or whatever, they're far more open to it than if you try and have that conversation at the back end, because they've been left to believe that what they wish for is actually possible. And I'm sure, you know, agents see that on the other side of it as well, you know, with their sales clients.
Absolutely. Lloyd, obviously with everything that happened last year, you know, we've well and truly now come back to what we've all identified as a really, I suppose, a robust seller's market in many respects. And I think more than anything, there's a lot of buyers. I feel the appetite for people wanting to buy more than I do the appetite for people wanting to sell, irrespective of the whole supply-demand dynamic. What's some advice you can give to people listening today that, you know, are very much, you know, absorbing every word that comes off the tip of our tongues and trying to plot their next move?
Yeah, Alex, I think really people need to be very well researched and educated. They really need to know the market. So, for example, if they are wanting to buy their own home, then they really need to know the suburbs and the comparables of what prices and what houses are selling for currently. And what places are selling for now is different to what they might have sold for a month or two months ago. And that's why, you know, one of the things we do is we present to clients what properties have sold for over the last 6 months, so they can sort of see a trend and gives them a bit of an idea around that. People also need to be finance ready. And they need to be ready to pull the trigger. So often in the current market, a lot of the properties obviously in Sydney are going for auction. So you don't get much of a choice around calling offers and things. But other than that, if you're putting an offer on a property, you need to be prepared to exchange and have a 66W, which basically means no calling off. So you need to be prepared to move. But that means getting confidence before you actually get into the market there, not trying to find your dream home. And then once you find it, spend a couple of weeks trying to research it and then trying to work out that you can have a 10-day cooling off, because those sort of things aren't going to work in the kind of market we're in.
I wholeheartedly agree, Lloyd. And I think, you know, it's almost just setting the expectation with buyers. And you know, you guys would probably spend a lot of time doing this at the moment. But, you know, the market's just moving too quickly with the stock we have at the moment to say, hey guys, you know, by the way, here's, take the next week or two to get your finance approved and get the building report done. You really, as a buyer, need to be proactive at the moment and get on top of all those things.
Yeah, we do have clients sometimes who are interested in a property, but they just want to do more research and they want to think about it more, and then they want to discuss it on the weekend, and then they might want to, you know, get mum and dad to have another look at it next week and so on. But yeah, there's just not time to do that in the current market. So you really need to look at, you know, get yourself educated. So there might be a number of properties you look at that aren't going to be the properties you buy, but get educated around those properties. And when you find one that you like, you need to be ready to move on it.
Absolutely. Michael, is there anything you can say to build on that?
Yeah, look, I think one of the best educational tools at the moment in this market is when buyers are looking for them to actually, you know, see a property go very, very quickly that they liked or were interested in. Because as Lloyd was saying, they've taken too much time. That can be one of the best indicators of, okay, I need to be able to act quickly. It's not the same market it was 12 months ago. And again, it's bringing social proof into it, where you can demonstrate, look, you know, we looked at this property yesterday. It ticked the boxes. You wanted to for 48 hours. That property's now gone. And sometimes you need that to get them into gear, to get them to move.
Absolutely. And I think too, just to touch on finance, you know, I don't think anyone listening today should fall under the false sense of security that it's just going to be a mere formality. Some banks are taking still a bit longer to get approvals, you know, finalized. So, you know, I always say to clients, you know, you wouldn't go down to Woolworths and do your grocery shopping and leave your credit card at home. And, you know, it's no different when you go shopping for property. You really need to make sure that you are ready to go and don't just start making offers on homes, assuming that that'll all just pull together, you know, within the next day or two.
Yeah, that's why we have pre-approvals in place for our clients. So yeah, sometimes people say, oh, that's okay. My broker said we can just give them a contract, give the bank a contract once we've got the property. Doesn't work like that, because often, yeah, that client won't have even given their financials to their broker, and they could be all over the place. So yeah, to mitigate against that risk, that's one of our policies we've got in place, is that we make sure the client's finance prepared, because that's how they're going to have the best chance of securing a property.
I think too, you know, it might be perceived as an initial hurdle, because, you know, a client might think, oh gosh, we've got to do our finance and that. But I think it's a much better conversation to have than, look, we're really sorry, guys, but, you know, this property sold to another buyer that was financially ready and you guys weren't. That's not a nice conversation to have.
Look, it's not. And just coming back on what Lloyd was saying, getting a buyer, particularly whether it's primary residence or investment, at the start of their you know, research buying cycle, whatever you want to call it, we have to have them finance ready. We have to have that, you know, conditional approval that we can go in, because when we're talking to sales agents, one of the reasons they love dealing with buyer's agents is we have, you know, buyer-ready buyers that we can pull the trigger on very quickly. So from our perspective, our reputation and the way we work, it's absolutely essential before we take a buyer to market that all those ducks are in a row so we can pull that trigger.
Lloyd, there was talk, I suppose, in the last quarter of last year around possible stamp duty reforms. And in fact, it's an open question for everybody here. You know, at this stage, to my knowledge, they're still basically, you know, it's in the infancy of possibly happening. But, you know, do we have any predictions and thoughts of if that will indeed occur and what impacts that might have on the market?
Yeah, well, it's still nothing's finalised or anything with that at this stage. And there's still a lot of discussion around whether that's going to, yeah, just suit various people. I guess it comes down to, you know, what sort of property you buy, how much you pay for the property, and how long you hold the property, because of the, you know, the different outcomes of stamp duty. Are you going to pay stamp duty up front, or are you going to pay, you know, a yearly tax on the property and things? And, you know, one scenario can work out better if you're planning to hold a property for, you know, 30 years as opposed to holding a property and then selling it and then buying another property and all that kind of stuff. So there's still a lot of debate around that, nothing finalized. And I think there's just so much talk around it because the government really hasn't been that clear. And it's because they sort of put out the proposed policy, but there's just so many different views about whether it would work for people or not.
Michael?
Look, I agree with Lloyd. And the other thing too, when any government with any policy, there's a lot of jawboning up front. And what they're talking about it today, come November or December or whenever they get around to passing, it could be a completely, you know, different package than talking about. So I think, you know, for buyers at the moment, put it on the shelf, worry about the changes when and if they do occur, and deal with the environment we're in at the moment, because, you know, waiting for that to buy property, you're only going to miss out.
I can't agree more, Michael. And I do think it probably falls in the white noise basket in terms of the current market. Obviously, you know, it's something that was, I found, particularly the last few months of last year, was heavily discussed. But I think if you're a buyer listening to this today, and, you know, probably first thing you want to do is reach out to Lloyd and Michael if you haven't already. But, you know, the other thing I think you need to be really realistic about is where the market likely is headed and the current supply-demand dynamics. So, you know, I think if you're really serious this year and you've made the decision to buy the next family home or buy that investment property, you know, don't wait on the basis that something could occur, because, you know, the market could have moved another 5-10% by then anyway, and you know, any benefits essentially out the window.
I think there's a quote I like using, or saying I like using with all my clients, and that is that no one's ever made money by waiting. And so many people,
that's very true.
So many people want to wait. They think, oh, if I wait a bit longer, will I get a better deal? Or if I wait with a market crash, and then I'll get a better deal and all that kind of stuff. And nobody who's actually made money and become wealthy has had the strategy of waiting.
Absolutely. And I think too, one of the biggest assets we all have as human beings on this earth is time. Arguably, it's our best commodity. So the quicker you're in a position to make a decision and get yourself into something, just let time do its thing.
Look, I agree. And you know, I get asked all the time, oh, when's the best time to buy property? My standard answer is this: when you got your finance in place and you're ready to go straight away.
Absolutely. And Lloyd, we've, you know, covered off on this so many times.
That's exactly what I say. Like, when's the best time to buy? The best time is now. If you're ready to buy now, if you've got your finance in place, now's the best time to buy, because there's always going to be a good opportunity. And, you know, even in buying a hot market, and, you know, people, and I know I've even covered it in the book, you know, talking about property cycles and how they work. But at the end of the day, even in a hot market, even if there are several markets that are hot, there's still good strategies on how to buy in those markets. So you don't just think, oh, I can't buy anywhere at the moment. You know, there's still good ways to buy. And even if you're buying your primary residence, there's still ways to make that work, because if you wait, then, you know, 12 months time, you know, you just end up being in another cycle where things are booming again.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if we really look at the last decade of the property market, to keep things simple, you know, with a magnifying glass, you know, we've seen, you know, there was a period of time where we saw double-digit growth over a couple of years. You know, we saw a slight dip with the Royal Commission, and, you know, federal election, state elections happened, then we sort of, you know, came out back to where we were, and you know, the market's now continuing through a health crisis to perform really well. Whichever point in time over the past decade you chose to get on or off the train, so to speak, most people have come out pretty good, I think it's fair to say, or at least there's been no substantial losses. So I think that just once again reinforces that if you're in the market and you've made that decision to purchase, you know, now's a great time to do it. And a question I always ask people is, you know, okay, you're financially proof, but are you mentally ready to buy a property? Because that's another thing too. You want to make sure that once your offer's accepted, you know, you're ready to sign that contract and see that process through.
And that's the same as I was saying before about, you know, being able to, you know, exchange in that property and not think, oh, better go to discuss it with, you know, my parents on the weekend, and can you arrange another inspection of it for us for next week, and then we'll think about it, and then we'll go back and visit it again. And, you know, by that time, the property's well and truly sold. So you're probably right, Alex. Mentally, you need to be in a position to say, yep, I've done my research, I'm confident in this market, and I know that I can move on this next good deal.
Absolutely. And get all the decision makers, all the people of influence in your life, get them through as soon as you can. Don't wait to have the offer accepted to then get mum and dad through, or uncle and auntie. Because, you know, we all know with family, obviously, particularly with a lot of close-knit families, you really take their word as, you know, it's a strong point of influence. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is get to that point of finalizing a deal and, you know, uncle or auntie says, oh, but the living room's a bit small, or, oh, we don't like the street it's on. You know, it's good to really be able to move forward with absolute confidence.
100%. One of the things that we do, particularly in the wish list meeting, is ask who are the decision makers in the process. So if it is a young couple, are the parents involved? Is there anyone else involved? And the reason we want to do that is exactly for what you were saying, is we don't want to get to a position where, hold on a minute, we need to wait now. Same on the investment side of it. You want to know, you know, who are, you know, anyone's going to be consulting within the family, or their mate down the pub that's the expert on everything, so we can eliminate those if we need to and really refocus, you know, the purchaser on where we need to have them.
So I think to sort of give an identity to that thought process, it's almost identifying the stakeholders as a buyer in the decision-making process, and obviously making sure that your buyer's agent or whoever you're working with is aware of those people, but also being aware of it yourself so that, you know, you are giving yourself the best opportunity to move forward. And, you know, sometimes we find that buyers and humans in general, you know, we get information paralysis because we're just overloaded with opinions and thoughts. And, you know, Lloyd, we always spoke about strategy, why strategy is so important for that reason. But I mean, I think if you can really knuckle down on who your stakeholders are, it's just going to really help you make the process as easy as possible.
100%.
And I think just getting back to the whole, you know, the whole buyer's agent thing, I mean, one of the things that people can rely on with a buyer's agent is just that, you know, apart from getting, you know, good properties and our experience to find those properties and off market and stuff like that, but it's just the advice and, you know, the ability to, you know, to get a property and get the right property for the right price. I think a lot of people are sort of, you know, under the illusion that a buyer's agent will save you hundreds of thousands of dollars on a property because we wave some magical wand and stuff like that.
Wear a cape.
Yeah, something like that. But at the end of the day, we do have good negotiation skills because we're in the market doing these every day, as opposed to, you know, the average person might only buy one or two or three houses in their lifetime. So for that reason alone, it's good to engage a buyer's agent. But apart from that, you know, we can't always get necessarily as low a price as you might want on a property, because the market dictates and the vendors dictate what the property might sell for. But it's just about that advice and making sure that you're not paying too much for that property as well.
Absolutely, Lloyd. And I think too, you know, just setting the expectation for people listening. I don't think a deal exists, you know, in really, you know, if we look at the Sydney or Melbourne, you know, the major metropolitan markets of the country, you speak to people all the time, oh, we're waiting to find a property that, you know, is run down, that we can get for 200 grand below what the market's, you know, paying at the moment. That's, I guess, Michael, as you said, it's a unicorn, right? So setting the expectation that a buyer's agent, particularly in this current market, if you've been able to buy a property for a good price, and you've had the benefit of having someone in your corner that knows that market very well, they understand what you're trying to achieve, and they actually get you over the line, I think that's a big win at the moment. And I think, you know, there's probably never been, in my view, a better time to engage a buyer's agent, just given the current climate of the market. It's not necessarily, as you said, Lloyd, about, you know, you're not going to go in and buy every property 200 grand below what the asking price is. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is, you're right, and just to go on with what you're saying there, sometimes people do want to put in a ridiculous offer. That's not our strategy either. It's got to be a fair offer. Now, we need to, you know, assess fair market value of that property, put in a reasonable offer, knowing that they'll come back with a counter offer and we can go from there. But if we put in a ridiculously low offer, they won't take us seriously. And that's not good for our credibility, and it's not good for the client, because the agent won't take us seriously. So from that perspective, we'll also give our client good advice on what the offer should be for the property, not what the client thinks they should be paying.
I think too, you know, for those who aren't currently working with a buyer's agent, and you know, we obviously highly encourage and advocate working with a buyer's agent, particularly at the moment in the current climate. But just to build on what you said, Lloyd, you know, I think it's really important, because I've seen this over the years. Some buyers do get a bit cheeky and they put in a really low ball offer. Not all estate agents, unfortunately, for better or for worse, will then give the time of day to that buyer and actually bother to call them back. Now, I think an agent that's very diligent should be contacting every buyer that's at least, you know, made the main indicators of interest on a home, which is taken a contract, you know, purchased a report, they've made an offer, you know, they're engaging with the solicitor on the property. But, you know, I actually think more times it ends up being disadvantageous to the buyer to put that offer, because you're basically, as you said, Lloyd, you're not putting yourself as a serious contender for the home. And, you know, if you're a buyer that's just getting a reputation in your market as the tire kicker that's always offering 10% below market value, you're not doing yourself any favors to find a home.
That's right, Alex. And sometimes I get people coming to me and they say, can you get us, you know, 20% below market value? Just because we're a buyer's agent doesn't mean, yeah, that's going to happen, essentially. And I guess on your other point there is that although legally estate agents are supposed to take any offer to the vendor, I know many that don't if it's a ridiculous offer. And in a sense, I can't sort of blame them, because, you know, they're trying to work for the vendor. And, you know, if you've got a property that's, you know, advertised for $3 million and someone offers them $2 million for it, then the vendor's not just going to, I mean, the agent's not just going to go to the vendor and say, well, we've got an offer for you and this is it. Like, yeah. it's ridiculous. So, and there are people out there who try to be a bit cheeky like that. So whether you're using a buyer's agent or not, this is sort of a good bit of, you know, warning that you need to be realistic about what the market's doing and about what your offers on a property should be.
Guys, if we can just devote some time to talking about the auction method of sale, which is incredibly prominent in many markets at the moment, and virtually, you know, we're sitting in a studio here on the Northern Beaches in Sydney. You know, I'd say probably 8 in 10 properties, at least where we are, will be going to auction. The other 2 out of the 10, you know, are properties that possibly may, for various reasons, not be suited to that process. But the bottom line is that a lot of properties are being offered for sale by auction. As we've identified, what's driving that is the very low supply versus the significant demand. And, you know, I think from an estate agent's perspective, it's actually a way to also manage that process, because, you know, if you're getting 100 or 150 groups through a home on a Saturday and you're getting bombarded with offers, it just becomes very difficult to manage that process effectively unless you've got some great systems in place. A lot of people listening to this are probably, particularly the ones in the market at the moment, will be faced with going to likely bidded auction to secure a property. What advice, Michael, we might start with you, do you think is worth sharing with people that are currently looking at auction properties or expressing interest in auction homes?
Look, there's a couple of things there in this market. And I think Damien Cooley was saying the other day, this has been his busiest start of the year that he can remember. When you're bidding at an auction, it is a very, very stressful environment. People go in without a strategy and they just try and throw numbers, and it's a highway to nowhere. When we bid on behalf of a client at an auction, we have a strategy. We'll go and view the property. We'll try and gauge the interest of the other, you know, that are going through the property at the same time. We'll speak to the agent. We'll get there early on auction day. We'll see the registrations, and we'll formulate the right strategy of, you know, do we go in hard and high? Do we wait out? And, you know, monitoring, you know, where the real pricing is. And that's two things for that. Firstly, is that we're objective. We're not emotionally involved, which means we've got a clear head when we're bidding, and we're not going to be overbidding. Secondly, the experience we have in auctions and with market knowledge means that we're not going to be overpaying on behalf of our buyers either. So short answer, engage a professional.
Just to add to that, Alex and Michael, look, I really like the auction process, because I think it's transparent. Yeah, people often talk about, you know, you pay too much at auction, but really that's true market value, because that's market value on the day.
Absolutely.
What a lot of people don't realize is what a property might actually sell for on the day. So I often get clients coming to me and they've been missing out on auctions for months and they, you know, they're tearing their hair out and everything like that. But they're just looking at the wrong properties and they've got the wrong expectations because they don't know the market's property. So, for example, if you've got a $1 million budget and you start going and looking at properties that have a price guide of $1 million, then they're looking at the wrong properties because although they're not, those properties are not necessarily underquoted because it actually is illegal to underquote, that's basically a base price guide. And essentially, the property is more likely to sell for maybe 1.2, 1.3 or more in the current market. So people really need to understand the market. One of the reasons that we've got a really good success record at auctions is just by really knowing the market and then advising our client, educating them. Now, if they've got $1 million budget, we'd actually bring them back a bit and say, you should be looking at this property. Now, this property only has two bedrooms instead of three and the price guide is only $750 on it, but we should be able to get this for within your budget. And just managing people's expectations, I think that's a key point to having success at auctions as well.
And, you know, a lot of auctions we're seeing at the moment, you know, there've been instances, particularly in the region that we're recording from today, where, you know, there's 10, 15 people registered at one auction. So, you know, I think choosing my words carefully, it's really important as a buyer, and obviously having a buyer's agent on your side makes this process so much easier, but really doing your due diligence on price, because I think price guides, you know, continue to be a bit of a somewhat controversial conversation in terms of where homes are marketed and where they sell for. I mean, obviously none of us in a room can ever guarantee a homeowner what the value of their home is on auction day. It's almost impossible to predict. You know, it's very much driven by market sentiment. But as you said, Lloyd, you know, you just want to make sure as a buyer you're shopping in the right market. I find if there's 10, 15 people registering for every home, obviously the demand's very high at the moment, but that to me seems, you know, you just got to make sure that you're realistically in a position to secure the home.
As Michael said, you know, using a professional is probably recommended. That doesn't actually mean you have to, you know, because a lot of people, you know, won't be using buyer's agents, for example. I mean, you can go and find your own home that you want to live in, but buyer's agents will actually attend auction on your behalf and bid because, again, like I was saying with the negotiation thing, buyer's agents, you know, do a lot of bidding at auctions and experience in that and can assist you with that. So if you've got your dream home there, you know, buyer's agents can really advise you and help you at auctions. So that's a good thing to think about as well.
Michael, any closing comments on the auction process and, like, I suppose in context of the current market?
Look, going back to what Lloyd was saying a little bit earlier, one of the things that we do address in the Getting Started session when we talk about the compromise on property is, again, educating the client to get in the right property where their budget is. Secondly, you know, there are people out there that do love to go out, find their own home. They love going to opens. We do a evaluate and negotiate. So if you're out there, you love going to opens, you find a property, but you don't have the expertise into actually benchmark that property to what the real value is and negotiate, we can do that for you as a separate service as well.
So Lloyd, Michael, where, you know, last 45 odd minutes have gone very quickly. There's so much we can discuss at the moment and probably could really, you know, get down to a micro level, everything that we've covered off on. There's a lot happening at the moment in the market. Lloyd, if we can just, to close off, spend a little bit of time talking about the book Positively Geared, which was, I suppose, a big driver behind what then birthed the podcast series, which is great because we're all sitting here in the studio today and, you know, we've really, over the past 12 months, built something great. And it, you know, the podcast continues to be downloaded by so many people. So thank you to everyone listening today for tuning in. But Lloyd, if I can just say congratulations, your book was awarded the best-selling property book in Australia for 2020, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah, thanks, Alex.
Which is an incredible accolade. And, you know, for those who have or haven't read it, for those who have read it, they'll know it's not hard to know why. It's almost your property investment Bible if you're in Australia. And this is our podcast is your monthly sermon. But Lloyd, that's now given an opportunity with your publisher to produce a follow-up book.
It has, Alex. So my publisher, which is John Wiley & Sons, have actually asked me to write another book. So that's in the pipeline. So no more details on that really, except that'll be released next year. And yeah, I'm just currently working on a chapter outline for that. And always interested in people's thoughts about what sort of content they might like to have included in the book. So if people are not already part of our Facebook group, Basecamp Property Club, then I recommend people become members of that group because I've actually put a bit of a call out there asking for people's opinions on what they think maybe wasn't included in Positively Geared that they might like to see in another book that I write.
Absolutely. I think that took the words out of my mouth. Jump on board, get involved with the Basecamp group and please do give your opinion. If you're listening today and there's something, whether it's niche or more so more obvious, that you know you'd like Lloyd to cover off in his next book or book, or in fact any of our podcast series episodes, please reach out to him via the Facebook platform. Otherwise, Lloyd, is there any other way that people can get in touch?
Oh, well, they can certainly jump on our website, ozpropertyprofessionals.com.au, and just, send an inquiry through and we'll have a chat to them there.
And Michael, obviously you're both on the same website, so it's not too hard. If they're looking for Lloyd, they can probably find you. But where's the best place for people to reach out to you?
When they go to our website, click on our team, and you'll see our bright, shining faces there.
And look for Michael Cohen. Thanks so much for your time today. Michael, thank you for joining us in the studio. It was really nice and enjoyable to have you in, and you've obviously, you know, got many years experience under your belt, and I think for anybody out there that's, you know, looking to make a decision this year, you know, both your advice is invaluable and would be well advised for them.
No, look, thank you for inviting me along, Alex. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're always happy to talk and guide people in relation to, buying either, their primary residence or investment.
Thanks so much for your time, guys.
Thanks, Alex.